Yes, hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Adam Peacock alongside Ned Zelich, and we're going to have a close look at the Socceroos Asian Cup campaign. One down, two to go. Hopefully more to go after those two, but it's in question after what went down on the weekend on Sunday night. And we're going to have a really in-depth look at the Socceroos' performance, where to now, some bigger picture questions to be asked as well, and anything else that stood out at a magnificent start to the 2019 Asian Cup. And we've got questions a bit later on. I put it out on Twitter earlier about, any questions you've got. And we've got some random ones as there. Ned Zelich, hello to you.
G'day, mate. Good to see you.
How's things? How's the sleep patterns going at the moment?
Not too bad. Not too bad. It's tough with the Asian Cup on. Getting more than 3 or 4 hours sleep. Obviously, been a lot of exciting games, so trying to stay up as late as possible to watch all the games, and the ones that don't catch, watch the replays. So it's going to be a tough period for all of us, isn't it?
Well, do you know what you needed? When I come back from overseas, I keep the little packs we get on the planes, and there's always some eye shades in there.
But I'm past that, you know. I mean,
really?
I struggled for maybe 5-6 days, and I was over it. But it's just, you know, the fact that you want to watch as many games as possible, and obviously some of us are very committed and like to hit the gym early in the morning as well.
Oh, look out. You're making a comeback, aren't you?
I thought about it, yeah.
Oh, dear. What we want to talk about, though, is the fact that we could do with you right now at your prime, the Socceroos. That result on Sunday shocked me. Going in, I thought, yeah, we'll be able to handle Jordan, because they were right out of form. Like, going in, they've drawn with China, which is an okay result, been beaten by Kyrgyzstan, been beaten by Qatar, and just really inconsistent results, Jordan, through 2018. So I thought, this is the perfect start. Not an easy opponent by any stretch of the imagination, not like they're 200 in the world, but an opponent that we should be able to plan for and execute against and move forward. It didn't work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was very confident as well, but knowing that you're coming up against a team that plays very passionate football and are very determined, and we've had issues in the past, so there certainly was potential. If you're not at the top of your game, you're going to have issues against teams like Jordan, and especially just with the way the game progressed, you concede a silly goal from a set piece. And then all of a sudden you're coming up against the opponent that was already kind of in defence mode and using counter-attacks to try and hurt you. But then you're up against a team that doesn't have to take any risks at all. And I think that was the most fascinating thing about the game, the fact that, you know, and we've been used to coming up against teams in the past as well. I mean, even at the Asian Cup here on our home soil, you had teams that packed the defence, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have to shift the ball quickly and find those little gaps. So I found it fascinating, because we all know what you have to do against a packed defence. You have to shift the ball across quickly to wait for those little gaps to open up, or you hit your creative players and someone has to get on the ball, play a few 1-2s, dribble past players to basically dismantle that defensive structure, and that wasn't happening. So, and that was the most disappointing thing about it, the fact that we just were not at the top of our game.
Another, I mean, the things that stood out for me having a look back at the match was that everything was made difficult by the way that the ball, it basically turned into a half pitch game of football.
Yeah.
So Matty Ryan was all on his lonesome in an entire half of football. All other players, all 21 other players on the field, were in one half of football. The ball, when it went from Sainsbury or Degenek into a Luongo or a Rogic, that pass, it seemed like Rogic or Luongo, whoever was receiving that pass, was taking one touch too many. There was not an immediate movement off the back of that ball going in, so that then slowed, and then that gives the opposition that half step to correct themselves if they've moved out of position. Also, it wasn't until Jackson Irvine came on that there was really anyone making third man runs of note. They were happening a little bit in the first half when everyone was fresh and moving, but that's when the defence is at its best, because they too are fresh. But late on, in that second half, it was like, would somebody make a run around the back where the ball isn't, so the ball can end up in there, just to make everyone think in that back six that Jordan have.
Yeah.
Was that missing for you, or was it something else that stood out about the lack of impetus for the Socceroos?
No, you're absolutely right. And it just got to the stage where it was very predictable, and we were making the same mistakes, and it was easy for Jordan to defend when everything was in front of them. But I think the most important thing, and that's what I was thinking during the game, is like, okay, if it's not working, you're getting in between the lines, you're losing the ball, you're getting turned around, and all of a sudden you have to start again. The formula really is, and we've seen that in the past with Postecoglou's teams, is that you have to maintain possession and just go from side to side, because eventually, the gaps might open up, but automatically you're wearing the opponent down. Mm. They're running. You're challenging them physically and mentally as well. So then you're hoping for someone, to lose a bit of concentration, focus, the last 10, 15 minutes where you can capitalise, and that just wasn't happening. Well, I mean, there were a few chances.
It did happen
late.
We did
get through. Yeah, there were a few chances.
McBeal hit the post.
Sure.
Economides had that great. He was good as well when he came in. Economides. I know statistical information.
But it could have been much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, they'll analyse it to the nth degree. I mean, the soccer is set up. They've got that many guys there looking at what they saw and revisiting what they saw. They've got the statistical analysis to look at. 162 final third passes at 77% accuracy. 562 passes to 96 for the whole game. 52% of passes went forward, so there was an intent there. But only 10 of 38 crosses completed, 2 of 9 from Bajic, 3 of 18 from Abil. He was on corners, so they don't. If a big header comes out and clears it from a corner, that counts as a failed cross. But you did get the feeling that we became a little cross-happy towards the end there as well, instead of doing what you were doing. You'd imagine against Palestine we're going to come up against the exact same tactic. Yeah. That's the blueprint. Jordan have shown it. Borkelman's their coach has shown it. So now we're just going to have to improve on what we're up against in the same manner. I mean, you depth is a massive issue, so there's not going to be a huge turnover in personnel. It's just the guys there are going to have to aim up a bit more.
But I mean, Graham Arnold and his coaching staff would have known as well what we're coming up against. So really, I mean, the time that you had in training camp used to play around and know what to do when you do come up against, a packed defence. And I mean, to be fair as well, Rogic just wasn't in form, And when you're number 10, the creative guy behind the striker is losing balls and you're getting turned around, it's an issue. And you see all around the world, great teams that come up against packed defences can be patient if they've got someone that can produce that little bit of spark that's needed in that final third, and that wasn't happening for us.
Tommy, I think everyone gets extra disappointed with Rogic when he doesn't aim up for the Socceroos in the way that they think he can, because there's just a lack of depth. There's like, well, who else do we put in there? Mustafa Amini could maybe come in and do a job. There maybe Jackson Irvine does. But we see him do these things for Celtic and we go, we want that too in a Coles shirt. I mean, you would have played with players for the Socceroos. Mark Viduka copped it for a while as well, he's scoring all these goals in the Premier League. Where's he going to score 4 for the Socceroos against the big opponent? So it's not a new thing. I just hope the guy comes through it. Talking to Daniel McBreen, he's a quiet kind of guy.
Yeah.
He can get down on himself a little quick, which hopefully he doesn't in this instance. He's hurt his hand, so I don't know if he's actually going to play against Palestine. We'll find out when the team sheet comes out.
But especially in games like this, that type of player is really
paramount.
Exactly. And under the microscope.
Yeah.
Because, who else is going to get in between the lines and produce something special?
Changes. Who do you see as changes? I've got Economides coming in. I don't know about, as much as I love him, Sainsbury at the moment. He looked like a guy who's played 7 club matches in 6 months. that to me, that look, he's usually so good with the ball. Remember that ball he played in against in the final. Into the Wongo.
Well, not just the final. I mean, it was right throughout that tournament.
He was just zipping balls in.
Those 15, 20-metre passes.
Yeah.
Those vertical ones.
Beautiful.
And that certainly was missing in his game. And sure, I mean, there were a few stray balls as well, you know.
Yeah.
The long passes that certainly were uncharacteristic for him.
And even do a Beckenbauer, just start running through.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden they've got a decision to make. Is it they go and close him down because they're marking a space there as well. Yeah. So,
although in Saturday, I don't think that was, the main issue. I mean, like you said, I mean, that second half, it was just played in their half basically, wasn't it? And it just comes down to someone producing a bit of magic. So I think it'll be interesting to see who Arnie brings in. Certainly, Economides is an option.
Mm.
But, is it going to be the type of game as well where you're just not getting him behind and you really need someone to get in between the lines then and start beating people, you know? So that's...
I wouldn't play a striker. I know this sounds stupid. I wouldn't play a number nine in the last line.
Yeah. That most certainly was not his game, was it, McLaren?
He can't
because
play.
Because yeah, he's just waiting for service to get him behind.
Yeah.
Isn't he, basically?
Exactly. And that's how...
Or a pinpoint... cross
that
he can get onto, which wasn't happening.
Talking to Graham Arnold after the Korea match, the friendly in Brisbane in November, when you were, I think you're in Napoli or you're Barcelona or you're Dortmund or one of those places, sampling the delights of European football. We were sampling the delights of Suncorp Stadium that night against Korea, and it was a good match and a really good idea to see how Graham Arnold wanted to play against a quality opposition. They swarmed. And Korea wanted to play. They weren't there to park it and then lump it to their big fella, Wee Joe, who actually scored a really good goal to win them the game against the Philippines the other night. But you could see what they were trying to do. It's that front four, really mobile front four, whizzing around, trying to win the ball back and then get the ball back in good areas where there's space to operate in straight away and hit them that way. Well, you can't do that against Palestine or Jordan when they've set up camp in their own half. When you get to the knockout stages, though, when you play those better opponents, that's when that might come into fruition. That's when a guy like Jamie McLaren, Andrew Naboot, might really come into their own with a bit more space to operate in with their pressure that they can put on the opposition.
Were you impressed with our performance against Korea? I thought we really struggled in the second half. We started...
First half an hour, outstanding. But Korea made an adjustment, and then that made it difficult for us to do what we wanted to do. About 25-minute mark, I think it was, they got an injury. And then I remember their captain going over or one of their senior players going over to Paolo Bento and they changed things. I can't recall the exact change. It might have been something more in midfield, an adjustment. And then it became a really even contest. But that opening 25-30, I think we hit them between the eyes a little bit. Now, that's not going to happen again because now we've exposed that's the way we want to play. And we played a similar way against a lesser opponent in Lebanon 3 days later. But... Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is that when we get to the knockout stages, we're not going to come up against what we've come up against in that opening game, and I dare say on Friday night as well.
They'll be prepared to play, won't they? It'll be a more open game.
Mm.
And that certainly, I feel, will suit us. But in saying that, it really is a situation now where it's down to the coaching staff to work out the weaknesses now of the opponent, Palestine, and they will have a few, most certainly. And certainly have a game plan to play to our strengths. And that's where now it's going to be interesting to see if he does make changes and who can come in and play that type of game coming up against an opponent that's certainly going to set up to counter. And that's another issue as well. We can talk about, what we have to do in possession, but there were quite a few times in that game against Jordan where it's a real issue when teams are countering and you can't stop the counter, and then all of a sudden you have to start again, and that really does disrupt your rhythm.
It happened early in that Syria match in the second leg against Syria in the World Cup qualifier when we started with three number 10s. Mm. And poor old Mark Milligan, 3 minutes in, there was a mistake left and there was two central defenders behind Milligan, and Milligan's got like five Syrians running at him trying to go, okay, what do I do? Now they go up the other end and score. So
but that's where you have to give Jordan some credit as well.
Definitely.
You know? I mean, not just their passion and their desperation, but the fact that you're coming up against an Australian team that's got so many numbers forward, and to be able to play out in those situations certainly requires a bit of quality. So credit to them.
And the plan, absolute credit to Jordan, because they went in with a plan. Every football team goes in with a plan, but the execution of the plan is the key. And they carried out that execution of the plan to the nth degree. Mm. Got a little luck, but the handball, hit the post, but you need that and you deserve it when you carry out a plan like that. Bigger picture, you look at, and this is a question for after the Asian Cup as well, the depth. So we've got a few injuries at the moment. But is there anyone outside this squad that would have made the difference in a game like that? Springs to mind?
Arzani.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But available?
No, well, that's a tough question. But, I mean, you're talking about down the track, so we're hoping that down the track, Arzani will be fit again and you'll be able to have these kinds of players to get on the ball, especially in those wide areas where you can go past players. And then all of a sudden, when there's balls coming in from those wide areas, then it really is a big problem for the opposition that you just can't adjust to that. So, I mean, he's definitely a candidate for down the track, but, I mean, who else is out there really?
So my query is, and it's, as I said, it's probably more for post-tournament no matter what happens, is that how do we ensure that we're not umming and ahhing about our depth in 10 years' time? And that question lies at the start of the answer to that question to me is the fact that where's our technical? We still don't have a technical director months and months after Eric Abrams walked away. Now, I understand it's about a month away, the actual announcement, but I can't quite understand the new board came in and, look after the shop front, the A-League announcement, that's huge. But at the same time, surely, you're not just looking at the shop front, you're looking at the production line, which is putting things in the shop front.
Yeah.
So surely you have a look at that technical director role. We're screaming out for it. Why the hell they didn't announce one then?
But when you talk about depth, specifically where, which position?
Every.
For me, clearly, striker.
Yeah.
Yeah? That's the big issue for us.
We're not alone there in world football.
Of course not.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look at Germany. And certainly replacing someone like Miroslav Klose was always going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
But in saying that, Timo Werner, huge potential. I still think he can play a big role there for Germany.
He's going to Liverpool,
but,
isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah. Right. Little rumour.
Right. But if you look at the other positions, I mean, in the wide areas, we've got good players in those wide areas, haven't we? Young players coming through.
Yeah.
We've got, Rogic in that central role who has creativity. Defensive side of things. I mean, you look at the left backs that we have. I mean, you know, you got Bajic, you got Gersbach, Zulo was there. There's a lot of players there. I think the biggest issue that I see is the striking role, and possibly defensive midfield as well.
Mm.
Yeah, and right back. I think those are the positions where we lack real quality when it comes to depth.
I just want to see direction put in place that ensures that there's no waves in positions. Like, it wasn't that long ago they were looking for a left back. Matt McKay was playing left back thing, and all of a sudden we've got a couple of guys in. What happens after these couple of guys? Are we going to assume that someone else is going to come in? Like, Gersbach, hopefully, is around for a very long time. Bajic is doing so well, but he's gone to a club where he's not playing regularly. Gersbach's not playing regularly either at Rosenborg. He's the second choice left back there. Mm. So you want guys who are coming through the system, and this is where the technical director comes in to ensure that this system is doing what it should be, and the young 15 to 18 year olds are getting enough quality opportunities. Position to play, it'll be ready for the first time, second division, promotion, relegation, etc., etc., etc. Blah, blah, blah. We won't get into that right now. But the thing that irks me at the moment is that we don't have a guy who's or a woman in place that's going to say, this is what we're doing.
But isn't that when it comes to players, firstly, playing, getting game time, and also where are you playing? Isn't that down to the national coach to basically set that standard and say, look, if you're playing in a league that just is not competitive, you're setting a standard, aren't you? You're saying basically, look, you've got to play somewhere where it's good competition and you're playing regularly. If you're not, then you're not part of the national team. I mean, if you come straight out and say that,
yeah,
then you're putting the ball in the court of the players, aren't you? And then it's up to them to make a decision.
Problem is, with that, if you make a hard and fast rule in something like that, is that the genius player who all of a sudden is sitting on the pine because he doesn't get involved with the, he doesn't get on with his club coach, does he get flicked?
Of course there are going to be
exceptions.
You know, a few exceptions. But I had the feeling when Ange came in that he really did set that standard. He really did say, well, I don't know if he said it, but it really did look like he was implementing a strategy, basically telling the players, look, this is it. If you're not playing, you're going to have an issue. And it depends on where you're playing as well. I had that feeling. But, I mean, you look at other national teams around the world, you know what I mean? You don't even need a coach to say that, do you? I mean, players know themselves. Look, if I go and play, if I leave Germany, if I leave Switzerland even or Austria to go and play in Saudi Arabia or somewhere else. I mean, no disrespect to these leagues, but...
Well, Milos Deganek, he's got the option apparently now of walking away from Red Star Belgrade, filling up his bank balance. But then it comes to the point of this is a guy that's a refugee. His family were refugees from a war-torn country. They've ended up in Australia with very little. They've started with things. Milos has made an absolute... he's gone so well with his career that he's ended up in this position where he can set his family up.
Yeah.
Full stop. Now, it might not help his football career, but it's going to help his family. I know which one I'd choose if I was in his position. There'd be no question.
What is he now? 20?
I think he's mid-20s.
Mid-20s, right.
24?
Yeah.
24, 25?
Yeah.
It's a big decision.
It is. And if you look at his career path, certainly he's... Fair to say he has tried. He's given it a go, hasn't he, in Europe? Yeah, he's been at Stuttgart. He was at 1860 Munich. And then he left to go to Japan, a good league, came back to give it another crack in Europe and has done well. So certainly I could understand that, you know. But still, I mean, you know, the national team coach is – for you, you can't get into that way of thinking, can you?
Well, it's hard, though.
Like we are now, understanding the situations of players. You're there to do a job and to get the best out of the team that you put out on the park. So you really need your players getting game time and playing in competitive leagues.
That's the thing, though, that if the players aren't playing, that you know they're good enough overseas... Like Graham Arnold knows if Alex Gersbach is good enough. He had him at Sydney FC. He knows what his top is or what his potential top is, but he's not playing. Does he then walk away from that and go with something who's someone who's playing regularly, but he knows he's not as good a player?
No, but that's the thing. I mean, you know, is it a situation of the players know?
So they ensure the players take matters know into their own hands.
If I do this, I'll still get selected, but if the coach comes out and sets a rule and says, this is it, then will the players' thinking change? Do you know what I mean? Will we see different decisions then in the decision-making of players when they choose clubs?
Did you ever make a career choice based on whether or not it was going to help your national team cause?
Of course, that was always in the back of my mind, but I knew as well. I mean, I was, going from club to club, Germany, England. It wasn't a drastic change in quality of league. Yeah. So, but you know, clearly you knew as well in the back of your mind. Look, if I'm somewhere and I'm not playing, then I have to change that. I mean, not just for the national team, but for myself as well.
Well, you made that decision, you know? You're telling the story to me off the record the other night, but I'm sure you won't mind me bringing it up, is when you went back to Germany to 1860, you had the choice of going to another club at the
time. Correct, Leverkusen, yeah.
But you weren't you were no guarantee there, but you knew you were going to play for 1860, so that made your mind up for you.
Well, exactly right. And during the Confederations Cup back then in Saudi Arabia. And, I mean, I was having issues anyway at my club in France, in Auxerre. I'd just come back from injury and I wasn't getting the game time that I wanted. So, you know, I had to make a decision. Look, Leverkusen, great club. Yeah, Christoph Daum, the coach, I spoke to him at length and he basically said, look, we've got Carsten Ramelow and Jens Novotny, two German national team players that are playing Novotny at the back and, and Ramelov playing the six. So you're going to have to wait, you know, and be patient. And I'm thinking, look, I'm not in a position now to be patient. I have to play. And I really had the feeling as well. I mean, I knew going 1860, went there in January, it was just a brutal relegation battle.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so I knew what I was getting into, but I just had the feeling, look, this club wants me, needs me right now. So it's the better decision for my career.
Bayer Leverkusen didn't tempt you with the best quality antibiotics if you got sick or anything like that through Bayer? No? Didn't happen?
A few Panadols?
Not in the contract.
Not enough.
Premium grade! Unfortunately. That got off track. That was to do with the depth of Australian football. It's funny how one result, like that next day, the reaction and all... And it's, I think it's a great thing that it opens up a lot of discussion about wide-ranging matters, because the Socceroos mean so much, the core of a lot of discussion within Australian football, that something happens like that, we get beaten, then bang, it's open for interpretation about what you want to talk about. And we've got a question about Graham Arnold. On purpose, I didn't ask a question about Graham Arnold because one came from one of our listeners, our tweeters, or whatever I want to call them, a bit later on. I've got a question about that. But just on the Asian Cup in general, anything else stood out for you? I was really impressed by the Philippines.
Fantastic.
Yeah. For a team that I think they had 12 different nations representative in terms of birth, but obviously all with Filipino heritage playing for them, and they ran South Korea right to the end.
Fantastic performance. And what about India?
India! Faulty.
Beating Thailand.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Yeah,
What a story as well. The Thai coach getting sacked after the game. Well, I mean, one game.
That was coming, though.
It was coming?
I want to see something similar to 2011 when Saudi Arabia sacked two coaches within the group stages, one after the first game and one at the end of the third. The interim got the bomb after the third game.
Yeah. Can we take it further?
What?
Coach sacked at halftime.
Has that ever happened?
It has happened.
Yeah?
It has happened.
Have you been there at the time?
No, but Tony Schumacher, the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. German goalkeeper, legend goalkeeper, was at Fortuna Cologne. Huh. And halftime, I think they were down 2 or 3 nil. The president walks in and says, thanks, mate. It's enough for today. You can go. That was it. He was gone at half time.
Imagine that.
Amazing.
The new chairman walks down to Graham Arnold at half time of the Palestine game and goes, sorry, Arnie, we'll drive you to the airport now if you want. Someone's already packed your bags.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. No, against Palestine.
Yeah. You know,
Iran were sensational against Yemen. I feel sorry for Yemen. I mean, the fact that they're even at the Asian Cup is remarkable. I read an article today about what that nation is actually going through, and the coach actually put in his contract that, yes, I'll coach them, but I'm never setting foot in that nation, because he's obviously fearful of his existence. There's vision of this match going on in Yemen, and there's a missile range over the back of the thing, and there's missiles going off.
Just terrible.
On the way to like anti-aircraft missiles going off. That's just
terrible.
Amazing. Yeah. But
the hosts, very lucky, UAE.
Yes. Yeah. Watched that game in its entirety. Bahrain were very, very good. Like a Jordan-type plan, but executed with a bit more intent, if you know what I mean. Like they were happy for UAE to create a few problems for themselves, get a bit out of shape, and then bang, hit them hard.
Yeah.
They actually played with two up front, Bahrain. So they were very, very good, Bahrain and UAE. I'll get the feeling that it's the wheels are going to fly off if something bad happens to them in the first half of their next match, because they just, like you, Ahmed Khalil is one of their very good strikers, doesn't look in shape, came off the bench, scored the penalty. They took a shot of him at halftime, chewing a wasp.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So it's like this, how dare you drop me type thing. So Zaccaroni's got a huge job ahead of him, I think, with the UAE.
Lippi? I'd love to get vision of his halftime team talk. Down 1-0 against Kyrgyzstan.
Oh, yeah. You've
come
seen
back,
the Italian
back,
managers
second
before.
Half.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have I? Yeah, a few here and there. Yeah. But there would have been a few. Mamma mia.
I reckon. Yeah. No, I won't say it. But
I reckon there'd be a few of those. Pavel Matyash, the goalkeeper, Kyrgyzstan. Own goal.
I'd like to think that the Chinese have looked after him by maybe getting him a move to a second division club over there after helping
second.
Him out.
Second? You're straight to Evergrande.
Second goalkeeper on $80,000 a week. Don't have to play. We don't want you to play, given the evidence that we've seen with our very own eyes. But you can come and have a fill up with us.
Iraq, Vietnam, what a game.
Yeah, you watched it in
sensational. Top game.
Were Vietnam as good
as... Little number 10 for Vietnam.
Are they as good as we thought they were going to be? Because they come in with huge raps, given what they've done in the last 6 months.
Well, not just that, but what about their youth teams coming through, their young players?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vietnam, really impressive. But Iraq as well, they've got a lot of good young players.
Mm.
And really two exciting teams. The Saudis, North Korea, 4-0.
Yeah, Democracy Cup, didn't see much of it, just saw the highlights.
What do you think the people in North Korea were told?
87.
We won 4-0.
Yeah. 4? 4-0 after 20 minutes. Glorious victory. I bet you the guy who got sent off, it's going to be interesting for him. I do like the decision. I was a bit worried about 24 teams. We got the depth, but I think it's the right decision. It's a shame it can't go to 32. I think that's a stretch at the moment to make it a proper. But the 24 like it. And I think the round of 16, the nations you just mentioned, those third place teams, say for Vietnam get through as a third place, or a Philippines, it's not going to be an easy game for anyone in that round of 16. Obviously, depth's going to hit them by the time they get to that stage. But that round of 16 might be another practice match.
Yeah, I guess it's worth giving 24 a crack. Isn't it?
Well, you're not convinced.
I just prefer the 16. It's just cleaner, isn't it? There's no...
It is. It is. But I like these...
It's like the 32 World Cup. I mean, you know.
But if there was...
You want to go to 48 now. But what's going to kill that is 16 times 3, you know?
That's ridiculous.
Isn't that crazy?
So you go all that way, have all that build-up.
And two games.
Two games.
Yeah? Three is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah? There's, you know, you got that first game everyone's excited about. The second one, you're under pressure.
Kazan,
the third
Samara.
One is like, oh, this is it. You
Sochi,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a story, you know, and two is just,
I'm just
you're
trying
in and
to,
out.
I'm trying to imagine Russia, that trip that you were on with the Green and Gold Army. I was with the Fanatics. Like, without, you take Sochi out of that.
Mm.
I don't want to even think about it.
Neither do I.
It was a great place.
That's how good it was.
I've got a question about you walking out of a place in Sochi.
What? That's it. We're done, are we?
No, not that kind of place. With you didn't eat your yogurt or something like that? It was a breakfast. It was like a cafe or something?
In Sochi?
I'll find it as I ask some other questions.
Did I even see you in Sochi?
No, I didn't.
I was central. You were in the outskirts, weren't you?
We were down near the ground.
Right, yeah, but actually staying.
Yeah.
You were staying near the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is miles away from the city.
But there was no need to go to the city. We were having a great time there.
Oh, I think you missed that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, where?
Mate, we could see Georgia.
Mate, I was in the centre of the city. Sochi, it was going off.
Was it?
Yeah.
It was going off where we were as well.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. I could actually get in the Black Sea and float 10 minutes and I'd be in Georgia. Good.
Yeah.
I'd be going around asking people about Ned Zelich in his time in good Georgia as well.
What a player.
What was the club again?
Dinamo Tbilisi.
Tbilisi.
Huge club back in Soviet Union days. Massive. Yeah. And great setup.
Mm?
Great setup. Great city. Loved it. Fantastic experience.
Should have floated there. Okay. Our questions. And I opened up the questions on Twitter on Wednesday afternoon. I don't know when you're listening to this. On Wednesday afternoon, just saying, any questions? We'll choose the three best. They don't necessarily have to be about football. We've got that much of a response. I've doubled it. I've got about six here, okay?
Right, wow.
The first one, I'm not sure this man, his name is actually what he says it is on Twitter. Fancy that. It's Sheik, as in like S-H-E-I-K, like Sheik, Yerbuti. Y-E-R-B-O-U-T-I. So tip of the hat to Sheik Yerbuti for the creativity in coming up with your Twitter handle. The question is, a lot of Arnie's critics seem to coincidentally share a dislike of Sydney FC. Do you think if he'd been appointed after leaving Central Coast that criticism would be less, or would it just be from different people as we're a nation of whingers?
Mm.
Gross generalisation there from Sheik.
Do you really think, and here's where I want to ask you, it's a combination of really 2007's involved as well, what happened back then. I mean, do you think there'd be less criticism if Graham Arnold was not at Sydney FC and we lose against Jordan first game. And 2007 happened as well. Well, Asian Cup,
So 2007 happened? I think when he was announced, people just automatically look back to that. And
that's what I'm saying. There's a combination of things. Sydney FC things involved as well. There's obviously a few out there.
Fox Sports got him the job.
Sydney FC
and his
coach,
mates got him the
but
job.
But Arnie loves to provoke people as well.
Yes.
Yes.
So always has.
Mind games, everything else involved.
A lot harder to play mind games.
So it's a combination of things.
A lot harder to play mind games in the international realm, I reckon.
Sure, but people know him from the A-League, and he's come out and said things, and I've got no issue with it, you know? I mean, as a coach, we want coaches to come out and say things as well, and that's where I don't understand where all of a sudden, sure, you're confident going into this game.
Did you have an issue?
Is there something wrong with that? Is there being confident, you know? And saying, look, I'm confident we're going to win this game. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's not just the coach saying that. He's sending a message to his players as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah? So, I don't know. I've got no issue with that. And
did you have an issue of how he coached in that game? How he set the team up and how they played?
I had an issue with it just looked like there just wasn't enough preparation involved, us coming up against such a tight unit and a packed defence. It looked like at times that we just didn't know what to do. Yeah, and that's where I would have expected a bit more. And it's not just Graham. Yeah, he's got a coaching staff there as well, you know, different minds, different backgrounds as well. So I was certainly expecting a bit more there with regards to, okay, we're doing this to achieve something else. Mm. And that was missing in our game because it was just way too predictable.
Adaptability.
Yeah.
Adaptability. So you'd imagine that there'll be adjustments made in that realm going forward. The next question I have is from Sam Jones. We're jumping around a little bit here, but I've got them in chronological order. Here's an interesting one from Sam. We'll get back to football in a moment. What's your idea of a perfect first date?
Mm.
Do you want me to go first? What do you think about it?
What a question. Yeah. I reckon, catch up somewhere. Nice park, sit down on a bench, have a chat, you know, communication is extremely important.
Is it light or is it daytime?
It's still light.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, checking. So it's sort of late afternoon.
Okay.
Late afternoon.
I was going to say, if you're taking person to a dark park, I'm thinking, Ned, I'm not sure this is making the greatest impression, but carry on.
It really does highlight how you think.
Wag in a minute.
I mean, for that to be your first thought. So late afternoon, you know, there's people walking past. We're chatting, communicating, have a bit of fun, you know, tease a few of the people that are walking past, you know, what they're wearing and stuff like that.
People watch.
Make a few jokes.
Yeah.
Things like that. And then you move on. Move on to a nice cafe.
What would you say?
Or a restaurant, not too fancy. Have a toasted sandwich or maybe a pasta, nice pasta pizza. Sit there in a crowded place as well.
Okay, it's got to be crowded.
It's got to be crowded.
Yeah.
You know? So you're there and it feels like it feels like you're in a bubble sort of thing, you know?
But
you're there. And you further chat, communication.
But
the food is important. It has to be good.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be good.
Yeah.
You know? You can't have us spitting stuff out and it's gotta be good. But it doesn't have to be too fancy, you know.
No,
what I mean?
No.
But that's what I'm saying. You've got to know where to go.
Cheap and cheerful. Yeah.
You've got to know where to go. And I reckon you top it off with you're up next. You go somewhere else and you get an ice cream. You know?
Yeah?
You get an ice cream.
And then what?
You got to finish it off with an ice cream. But
and then what?
There's got to be a time limit as well, you know? You can't go too hard, you know, like we're out till 2, 3 in the morning. Yeah? There's got to be a time limit to this. You have to...
Hang on. What if it's going well?
So yearning for more. You know, it was good. It was funny. We had good food. We had an ice cream. Yeah.
Leave it hanging there.
Drive home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what?
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Not on the first date.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a little more open-minded with such matters.
Here we go. Let's go.
I'll take you back to the first date I had with my wife. I drove up there, met up with her, picked her up from her place. We went out for a nice Thai meal, I think it was. It was summer, so it was still light. It wasn't in a dark park on a bench or a light park on a bench. It was just still light, so we went to this place. And then we went across the road to the beach. The sun was setting and all that. I thought, this is going so well, I'll just go in for a kiss. And she just turned away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is quite a remarkable thought that 18 years later we're sitting here with four children after that moment.
Yeah.
At that moment I wouldn't have expected what transpired in the 18 years since. But that's my idea. Not sort of dinner, then maybe go for a little drink after it.
Yeah.
And I like the finishing with the ice cream.
Mm.
I'm not going to be so secure or insecure as to say that I'm definitely going to cut it off at a certain point and give it a time limit. I think you leave it open-ended. And if things are going especially well, you're seeing each other the next morning, waking up next to each other.
Mm.
I've got no problem with that. If it's going well.
Yeah.
There's a connection. You know. Mm. You know early.
Yeah. Oh, of course. You get a feeling for these things, yeah.
This is talking to a man who hasn't been on a first date in 20 years, though. So. I wouldn't know, really. I'm just making shit up. And it's actually a good thing that I haven't been on a first date in 20 years. Otherwise, it'd be a very expensive problem. And I'm seeing my kids every second weekend. That's not important right now. Anyway. There's ways of doing it. I like your idea, though, Ned. You've thought about that. I like it, especially.
Well, it's just off the top of my head.
from Nathan Hodson. And thank you to Sam Jones for that question. Nathan Hodson, what was your dream job growing up, Adam Peacock?
Ooh.
I've got it.
Yeah.
So
that's, oh, really?
That's an easy answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to work in media.
You did.
Sports
what,
media.
As journalist. What? High school, 15, 16-year-old.
12-year-old.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I knew that early. Wow. I knew very early I wasn't good enough to get paid to play sport.
Okay.
So I may as well get
paid. But you tried different sports?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You did.
Football, cricket, rugby league, played all those. Not good enough.
Batter, bowler?
Bit of both. Took a hat-trick once.
Did you?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, still got the ball at home. Still got it on the mantelpiece. Yeah, that's how sad my life is. A hat trick I took in under 10 is a central part of our lounge room.
So like actually playing sport, your number one sport was?
Football.
Where you excelled? It was football?
I wouldn't say excelled, but loved playing.
Right. Sure.
Soccer. Yeah,
okay.
Football.
Yeah.
Played a lot of touch footy as a kid as well. That was enjoyable with a lot of mates. Mm. But yeah, football, soccer. But knew I wasn't going to be good enough, so I wanted to get into this.
No league? No.
Nah. The twig. You get snapped.
Crunched.
Exactly.
That's Peacock over there on the stretcher.
Yeah. There's the other half of him still on the field. Nathan Hodson. His second part of his question, what would have been your second career option, Ned?
Second career option?
If football
it
hadn't
would have
worked
been,
out.
It would have been something sport, but, you know, how? You would have had to work it out pretty early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rugby league.
I played all sports at school. Yeah. I played rugby league at school. I played AFL at school. I played cricket at school. Loved all sports. But I really probably would have excelled at golf and tennis. Yeah. Because I'm actually good at those sports.
Okay.
So I would have put in, you know, just repetitions and and full on every day golf, tennis, one of those, I reckon. One of those.
Okay.
Yeah. But away from sport, I don't know. What else? Yeah, I mean, I was always interested in property and stuff. Probably a builder, yeah, driving around and yelling at workers and things like that.
Not being one of them?
Yelling at my brother.
You can do that anyway. Don't have to get paid to do that. As a kid, you actually played football with or against Michael Bevan, the great Australian cricketer?
Played against him.
Against. Here's a question from Paul Dennett. If Michael Bevan had stayed with football, would he have been a Socceroo?
Ooh. It's a tough question. I'll tell you what, he was bloody good.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, it was just – we played for Western Creek in the junior competition in Canberra, and I remember always, you know, the week leading up to the game, my dad, all the other parents, they were absolutely shitting themselves.
So, Bevan watch.
Michael Bevan. Michael Bevan. He is so quick. He's so fast. You've got to stop him, you know? And we'd end up like winning, you know, like 6-3, Bevan hat-trick.
It's not the game, though. So he could have. He could have. There was a possibility that he could have, yeah, but he didn't.
He obviously was good.
He was very good. And the big question to end, this has come from JS. She has sent this one in. Ned, you're huge on your Tim Tams, and I can only imagine what you're doing to the shelves of your local supermarket in terms of the Tim Tam production and utilising their availability.
When you can get two for $5
in the Asian Cup month overnights. So, Ned, your top three favourite Tim Tam flavours.
Easy.
Yeah?
Double coat.
Double coat?
Yep.
We've got some examples in here. Matty Cole, one of the producers, have brought in our catering tonight and their Tim Tams.
The Barcelona of biscuits.
As in the town or the football team?
The team.
Oh, I thought you meant you went around just getting extremely...
The FC, but the Blotto
and Sangria with them or
amazing.
Something. Yeah?
Amazing.
Yeah? Okay. What else?
White chocolate.
White chocolate.
White is second.
Really?
Yeah. And then chewy caramel.
Yeah, third.
Yeah. Chewy caramel third.
Champions.
But I can't remember the last time I had chewy caramel. It's been a while.
Well, guess what?
It's been a while. So I've been hitting the double coat and the white.
We've got a packet right here. Oof. And we're just about to sit through a night of Asian Cup broadcast. A funny little feeling this won't see midnight somehow. A packet of chewy caramel. There they are right there. Sorry to make that sound effect to you, but it just had to prove that they're here. Chewy caramel made with irresistible real chocolate. That's what it says on the packet.
I tell you what, there's going to be no patience here in possession. It's it's route one.
A Jordanian-esque performance. Ned Zelich eating his Tim Tams. Coming right up at Fox Sports. Thank you, everyone, for all of those questions. I was expecting maybe to get 10 and having three, and we ended up with about 50 and whittled them down to those six. But we will do this again, and we will open up the questions again. So think wide after his answer, Ned's answer, about a perfect first date. Think wide about what you can maybe ask us in the podcast room. We'll do another one very, very soon. Ned Zelich, thank you for your company for this particular chat.
Thanks, Adam.
And go the Socceroos against Palestine.
Go
a reminder,
the
every single game of the Asian Cup 2019 available to you through Fox Sports. Look forward to your company on the coverage and especially on Friday night from 10 p.m. Eastern, right after the back of Friday night. A-League action and W-League action on Friday night on Fox Sports Australia and Palestine. We'll speak soon.